Hi, everybody. My name is Mary, and I'm an addict. And I have a couple of disclaimers, I guess. I'm really very nervous. My palms are sweaty. I get there's something about sharing in front of a group of people that is a very vulnerable thing. And for me, I don't know about all of you, but I wasn't raised to be very vulnerable. Okay. So that's my first disclaimer. And the second is that, you know, I am a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and I am just like everyone in this room. I'm just trying to stay clean one day at a time like everybody else. I'm not a representative of Narcotics Anonymous. Like I said, I can only share with you me, my experience, my strength, and hopefully my hope. And that's something I feel like I have a lot of these days. So I'll tell you a little bit about where I come from, how I got to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, and hopefully a lot about how I stay clean and how I stay here in Narcotics Anonymous. I grew up in Newport, Rhode Island. My father was a park bench wino, and my mom was a workaholic. I really don't have any memories of my mom when I was growing up. When I was five, I started smoking cigarettes in the broken down bus down the street. I wanted to be cool and tough like everybody else. And when I was eight, I started smoking marijuana. By the time I was 12 or 13, I drank to black out all the time. And from that point on, it was an everyday adventure. And my purpose was to get high. That's what I wanted to do all the time. It went quickly downhill. You know, I came to Florida when I was 18, the day before my 18th birthday. And, you know, along the way, I tried several different drugs. You know, I was a garbage head. I'd take whatever you put in front of me. I didn't care what it was. I didn't care if people would die from it. You know, I thought it was more exciting. You know, the crazier it was, the better I liked it. And so when I got here, I became, basically, I was a daily crackhead. You know, I was, I got to the point where I was living on the streets. And yet the funny thing to me is that I didn't think that there was a problem. You know, I the last time I used, I went out on January, I guess it was New Year's Eve, and I got clean on January 12th. So I stayed going for all those days in between, and just no shower, no food. You know, I woke up next to people, I don't know who they were. I was very ashamed all the time, and I used to always think, oh, it can't get any worse. You know, this is it. It can't get any worse. You know, I've hit the bottom. And you know what? Every time it got worse, I would always push it a little farther. Something that I always find kind of funny is that when I was a kid, I really didn't have any goals or dreams, and I certainly didn't think as a child that I wanted to grow up and be a crackhead. Okay? That wasn't a dream of mine. I can remember at a time playing Barbie dolls, and I don't think they were smoking crack, okay? So, it just kind of went that way, you know? It's like anything unattended. You know, you leave something alone long enough, it's going to go its own way. You know, and that's what my addiction did. It went its own way. And it took me the years that it took me to become that person. I didn't just wake up one day and go, whoop, here I am. Every day was pushing it. So I often think that it took me years to become the person that I had become when I was out there using. Okay, so it's going to take me, if not the same amount of years, probably more years in recovery to become the woman that I'm supposed to be. And for me, when I look back, you know, and I used to say this a lot, that when I first got clean, I could be anybody I want to be now. You know, I got a clean slate, okay? And it's true. You can be anybody you want to be. But after you work the 12 steps, you realize that the person you want to be is the person that God intended you to be. And there's a big difference in the person that I want to be and the person that God wanted me to be. And I'll tell you that now, because I'm going to talk a little bit about the steps, because the steps is where, for me, I really learned about who the real me is. Okay, and it started off with working that first step, and I got a sponsor, and actually a friend of mine got a sponsor for me. Because my idea of a sponsor, okay, they kept telling me, you got to get a sponsor. Pick somebody that has what you want. I had the guy that I wanted in my mind, okay? You know who I'm talking about, right? We all know who he is. It don't matter. They're all the same. Okay? They're all the same. In my eyes, back then, I couldn't tell the difference between a good man, a bad man, or any man. They're all the same. If they like me, great. We're in for the ride. Okay? And so I was going to pick this guy because I really liked what he had. He had a Volvo. He had a BMW motorcycle. He had a pool table in his dining room. He had a house on the intercoastal. He had these two big dogs, right? And I just loved this guy. I was like, that's what I want. Because you know what? That's what I wanted. That's all I knew. Stuff. And when I got clean, that's all I wanted was stuff. I thought that was important. That was going to make me be a productive member of society. Well, as I worked the steps, and needless to say, he actually was one of my girlfriend's boyfriends, and she was like, oh, hell no. You are not going to get him for your sponsor. And she found me another woman to be my sponsor. And talk about an angel. This woman was perfect for me. She was from Boston. Since I'm from New England, you know, you got that little funky accent thing going on, you know, and the hands going and everything, right? So we had a lot in common, I thought, you know. And we really did. We sat and did our steps, and I started doing my steps, and we would go downtown to down by the end of the Intercoastal and sit out on the water there. And as I looked at my life, you know, and it's so funny because I look back and my first step was 7 questions, okay? Now we got this workbook that's, what, 68 questions? If you only count the bullet points, not all the questions within it. But when I looked at that first step now, okay, I look back and there was some serious stuff that I wanted to cheat. I was asking my friend, what's the answer to number 2? She was like, Mayor, this is your life? I was like, yeah, but you used with me, you know what I mean? So, you know the answers. So, and that was another gift, and that's how I got here, because my girlfriend got clean before I did. You know, one of my girlfriends got clean before I did, and she was able to bring me to the rooms, you know, and that's the way this fellowship works, you know, is one addict helping another. So I sat there and worked through this first step, and I had to admit, you know, unmanageability and powerlessness. Well, you know what? I didn't understand powerlessness. I understood unmanageability, okay? I knew that my life was unmanageable. You know, if you're hiding in a dumpster smoking crack, okay, there's got to be issues there, okay? There just has to be. I don't know, I really, at the time I didn't see it, but it took me a little while to get that. And I didn't understand powerlessness. And they told me to just keep coming back. And what I know today about powerlessness is that when I put something into my body that I cannot control, it will control me. And that goes for a lot more than just drugs, okay? Because I'm an addict. And I want what I want when I want it. So, you know, after I looked at unmanageability and powerlessness, I move on to a second step. And that second step to me is all about insanity. And to me, when I look at that, you know, I'm going to go back to the first step just real quick. I'm going to tell you right now, because this is my insanity, okay, is the first step, when I got clean, I had 4 boyfriends. Okay, 3 or 4, I don't remember how many. It was 3 or 4, and it was a trip. And I thought, because the principle behind the first step is honesty, I thought that I was working a dynamite program because they all knew about each other. I was honest, okay? Now, did I know that that was damaging to me? No, I didn't know that at the time. But I was as honest as I could be, and that's what we ask for here. for you to work your program to the best of your ability. So what? I had three boyfriends. Did you think people shunned me? They loved me. I had all these guys. It didn't even matter. And these women were like, honey, we'll just keep loving you. And I say, well, you know the only reason you ain't doing what I'm doing is because you broke your hustle. You're old, and you broke your hustle. Because I was 24, and back then that was young. Okay, back then that was young. People are getting clean really young now. It's great. Okay, I love that. But I used to say, oh, y'all broke your hustle. That's why you don't do what I do. So when I move into the second step, and I start looking at the insanity in my life, I have to start saying, well, and you know who I always think about is, y'all may be too young for this, but there was a girl on TV. Do you remember that girl on TV, Susan Powder? Mm-hmm. She used to do these commercials, stop the insanity! She'd be yelling, right? Yeah. And I was like, oh, I got it! That freaking makes sense to me. Stop the insanity. I have to stop the insanity. Okay? So yes, I have to stop picking up. And whatever that is, the drugs, the men, the gambling, the shopping, the excessive spending, the hookers, whatever. I have to be the one who stops that. Okay? Now, when I move on to my third step, I start looking at finding a God of my understanding. And you know, I didn't do that in the second step. And you know, a lot of people kind of gear towards that. But the second step to me is trying to let you know that what you've been doing is insane. Okay? Now, it took me years to understand that my behaviors were crazy. I didn't know that. Otherwise, I would have stopped a long time ago. So when I look at, you know, my behaviors, and I start looking at that third step, I start saying, well, this is where I have to start developing that contact, okay? It's where I'm going to start developing, and I just found this paper the other night. My very first third step was I had to draw a picture of my higher power. I'm not a very good drawer, okay? I'm just not. But it was so neat to see that and how my life has transformed and things have changed and my higher power has kind of grown up with me. You know, not that my higher power has changed, but my idea of my higher power has changed. It's a lot less rigid. You know, I don't beat myself up for things anymore. So when I look at that third step and say, the principle behind the third step is trust. Okay, so I have to look at my behaviors and go, okay, first step, whatever behavior I'm doing, whether it's using, stealing, sleeping around, whatever it is, I have to admit that I'm powerless over. The second step says I have to stop the insanity. The third step tells me that I can let God handle the rest. That I'm going to be okay if I stop doing this stuff. If I stop lying, I'm still going to be okay. I lied all my life. I didn't know that lying was not okay for me. And it may be okay for other people. That's great, fine, whatever. It's my program I'm talking about. So for me, a big thing that went on early on was I was a terrible thief. I boosted everywhere I went, and I ripped people off whenever I got the chance, okay? And I did that for probably the first 9 months of my recovery. And I can remember the day I clipped somebody for $100. I slid that in my pocket, and it didn't feel good. I still can remember this day. It was the first time ever I felt like, oh my God, what the heck was that feeling? I called my sponsor up, and I was like, what in the hell is going on here? You know, I usually feel great when I get people, okay? I had this belief system when I got clean that if you could be had, you deserved it. If I can rip you off, you deserved it. If you're that stupid, that's your problem. All right? I know today things are, it's not right. It's not okay to steal from people. They work hard for their money. You know that song, right? But no. Okay, look. You don't want to hear me sing. Anyway. So I look back at that and I call my sponsor and I said, look, I said, what is the problem? You know, I just clipped some guy for $100. What's the problem here? And she goes, oh, praise God, you have a conscience. She said, I was getting a little worried. We've been meeting every week, and you're still crazy as alone. And she said, well, thank God. And you know what? I'd love to say that that was the last time I stole. It's not. I had to go back and forth because I didn't want to give up the old Mary. That old Mary got me to where I was. I was alive, and damn it, I went through a lot, and I survived. And if you all don't think that you're here for a reason, you better think hardly. Think back, because I can tell you that if you've been anywhere that I've been, and most of you have, you are alive for a reason. Because a lot of people have died for a lot less than we ever did. And how I know that is because I've seen people come into the rooms, young people. I remember this one girl, she was beautiful, beautiful little blonde girl, long blonde hair, gorgeous. She was about 18, 19, maybe 20 years old. And we had this little connection. We talked all the time. And she came in for about 90 days. She relapsed, and she died that night. And you know what? That's a reality of this disease. She's young. She's a kid. You know, I have another friend that relapsed, and his mother found him dead in his bed on Christmas morning. Merry frickin' Christmas, Mom. You know what I'm talking about? Your mother, you don't want to put your mother through that. I don't care what kind of relationship you got with your mother. Nobody wants to wake up and find their kid dead. I'm sorry. So I move on to this work in the fourth step because now, you know what? I'm lazy too, and I'm a procrastinator. And you know what? I don't want to do this. And I certainly don't want to look at me because it's much easier to look at all of you. Oh, look at her skirt. Oh, look, how dare she wear what she's wearing? You know, like this, okay? Now this, you're talking about a person that used to come into the meetings with skirts on that were about that big. I used to wear bras as tops with a little vest over it and boots above my knee. What do you think I was looking for? It wasn't recovery. Okay? You ever hear that thing, looking for love in all the wrong places? A Narcotics Anonymous meeting is definitely one of the wrong places. But I will tell you this. I'm dating a guy that's in recovery. Who knew? And it's a very healthy relationship. We're not up each other's butt. You know, we see each other when we can see each other. It's a very nice, loving relationship. Who thought? But you know what? I had to do a lot of learning in that area because I was a very unhealthy girl. I know Spanky can tell you. He was there, man. Woo! I was crazy. Spanky, remember them outfits? Yeah. Oh, shoot. I got pictures of boy. Woo! I'm like, dang, what was I thinking? But I was thinner back then, so, you know, hey. So we move on and we work the fourth step and we look at ourselves and we're thorough, you know, and you sit down and you just do it. You just write out this stuff, okay? You know, there's no big secrets there. We've already lived it. So the bottom line is just to do it. So we do it, so then we can actually share it with somebody else. And as I sat and shared my fifth step, you know, the fourth step, the principle behind the fourth step is courage. Because it takes a lot of courage to do that, okay? And when I went on to the fifth step, to me that was an amazing... You know, when I first did my first fifth step, it was more like a confession. Because I really didn't dig in and look and see why I do what I do. But I just needed to get on with it, you know? And now that I look back, that was important because I needed to clear away that garbage so I could look at the stuff. The real stuff that was going on with me. You know, and a lot of people talk about the fourth step being the tough one. Well, for me, it was the sixth step that was really hard because the sixth step is where you got to look at you under a magnifying glass and God gives you every opportunity, okay? God goes, oh, you're on the sixth step? Here you go. Let's see that attitude. Let's see that behavior. Woo! And it's coming all out. I mean, everywhere. I'm like, all of a sudden I'm gossiping. I'm talking shit about everybody. What happened? How did I go from being okay and not doing that to, you know, spreading my poison instead of my recovery? I'm spreading my disease. You know what? Because God gave me the opportunity to work on it. He gave me the opportunity to see the areas that I'm not all that well, okay? I have issues. And I always like to say I got more issues than Time Magazine. And that's a weekly paper, okay? That's a weekly magazine. I But when I looked at that, and it's funny because I always say, you know, I think about my issues that I have, right? And I always think, oh, I dealt with them and I put them up on this nice little trophy stand, you know, and they're not going to come down anymore, okay? And all of a sudden this thing just falls and lands right on my head and I'm acting all crazy again. You know, because what I've learned through working these steps is that my recovery, my behaviors, my attitude is only as good as my recovery is on that given day. Which means I can be in disease and back out there using just as fast as anybody else. And I keep that very clear. There are certain things that are very black and white for me today. Okay? And one of those is acting out with men. I know, and I'm not just talking men, I'm talking women too. Watch out, all right? I'm all over the freaking place. I don't even give a rat's ass. I'm like, woo! It makes me feel good. You know what I mean? And if it makes me feel good, I want more. So if I'm acting out, I got to pay attention to that, because for me, it's like hitting the crack pipe. One time, I could be out the door. And I've worked too hard to become the woman that I am today to give that up. And I'm telling you, I've heard some skeevy shit out there now. I don't want to go back. It's been 15 years. Let's keep it that way and more. Because I got a great life. So when I start working that seventh step is where I really start to realize that this is about God's will for me. It's truly about God's will for me. It's not about what I want. And the seventh step always shoots you right back to 1, 2, and 3. Powerless and unmanageable. Whatever it is you're working on, you're powerless and unmanageable. Insanity. Stop the insanity. Third step, trust that God will take care of you. And it's real simple. We make it really difficult. And it's very difficult when you're in it. Very difficult when you're in it. But I will tell you, it's not impossible. I know, because I've worked on a whole bunch of things. And now guess what I'm working on? Food. Food! Okay. Never wanted to say, oh God, now I got issues with food. That's obvious. You know, I'm a big girl. And that's okay, because I got to tell you, I'll be real honest with you. I'm okay with being a big girl. And not to the point that I want to stay big, but I'm not going to kill myself behind it. You know, when I had about 3 or 4 years clean, there was a time that I almost committed suicide because I had this little pinch of back fat where my bra held my, come on. You know what I'm talking about? If you got a bra on, the damn thing's going to cut into your back no matter how skinny you are. And I'll tell you something. I'm down in the Bahamas in this hot pink Kelly Bundy dress, skinny as a rail, talking about, oh, I got back fat, I'm going to jump out the fucking window. Okay? Issues, man. You know what? The longer I stay clean, the more I realize there's just more stuff to work on. Okay? So now I can tell you, I don't want to kill myself. I know I'm okay. I feel good inside. You know what? I know that I have an issue. I need to get back to my exercising. I'm not going to beat myself up about it. I'm not going to hurt myself. I'm certainly not throwing myself out a window. You can just forget about that. Okay? We were just down in the Bahamas, Margie and I, and it was never a thought to jump out the window. We were having a good old time, walking on the beach. There was a convention down there, an NA convention. It was really a lot of fun. So then I move on to the eighth step, making a list, became willing. I heard those two things and I was like, all right, I can make the list, but I'm definitely not willing. I'm not willing to make amends to nobody, no how, because I'm the victim. I'm the one, you know, that deserves the amends. And what a load of crap that is. You know, I stomped all over people that I could, you know, all through my whole life, ever since I was a kid. I manipulated people to get what I want. So my sponsor at the time, she was a wonderful woman. She said to me, I said, you know what? I can make the list, but I'm not willing. Clearly, I'm not willing. And she said, I don't care. Just make the list. And I said, all right, fine. So I make the list, okay? And I'm all in like, oh, I'm not doing this crap. This is such bull, you know. And I'm like, oh, whatever. And so I go to her, right? And I said to her, look. Here's my list, but I'm still not willing. And she says to me, well, obviously you're willing because you made the list. And I was like, oh, no, she dope-fiended me. I was like, how does that work? My sponsor's dope-fiending me, right? But you know what? That's true. And as the opportunities came and I moved on to my ninth step, and the opportunities came to make these amends, it wasn't like I had to run out and make amends to every person on my list right then. You know, she told me that God would provide the opportunity. There was a man that I went out with early in my recovery, and I owed him some amends because I was crazy, man. Crazy. I hadn't seen this guy in 6 or 7 years. Do you know that as soon as I got done going over the ninth step and we kind of came up with a plan, like 2 weeks later, I run into the guy? I'm like, that is crazy. But that's God. That is God working in my life. God does for me what I can't do for myself. He always takes care of me, no matter what. I've just realized that. Even in the most bizarre situations, and I think, I don't understand. You know, there are certain things that really affected me profoundly, like that September 11th thing. You know what? I didn't understand. God, how could you let something like this happen? People, you know, they lost their kids. Kids lost their parents. You know what? That hurt me. That hurt me down deep, and I didn't understand it. And I remember seeing this, I got this email one time, and I thought it was a really cute explanation. And it was about this little kid sitting on the floor, and his mother was doing that needlepoint thing, you know, that round thing that you put the wood on. So if you've ever seen it from underneath, it's all these strings, and they're like tied up in knots, and it just looks crappy, right? And the kid's down there, Mom, what are you doing up there? I just don't get it. I don't see it. And she says, you know what, son? One day you're going to see it. One day, kid, you're going to know. You know, and when she got done doing her little needlepoint, she invited him to come up and look from up here. And from up there, he saw this beautiful little piece that his mother had been working on. You know, so from sometimes underneath when we're in it, we don't know why, and it just looks like shit. And later on, when you get past it, you can look back and go, oh, now I got it. Now I understand. And so, for me, that's a part of doing the steps. You know, and I don't know why everybody tells me to do the steps. I didn't know why. I just kept doing it. You know, and so as time went on, there was this woman that I really owed her a big amends. And all I could do, I sat down and I wrote out this letter. And I finally got the courage and mailed it off to her. And she called me and she said to me that she could not believe that I was apologizing to her. She said, you know, I'm the one who needs to apologize. And I felt so, you know, because she was the last one. I wasn't going to apologize to her. But it touched my heart so much. And we're back to being friends again. And, you know, it's just lovely. I mean, we have a great relationship. So then I move on to work on my 10th step, which is pretty simple. You know, to look at your behavior every day, you know, every night. And where that came in good for me was journaling. I loved to journal back then. You know, now I don't do it as much because I get very busy and, you know, it's just not part of my daily routine anymore. But when I get jammed up, I do it again. You know, the key would probably be to do it before I get jammed up. Hey, what a concept, right? But, you know, I'm still an addict, always going to be an addict, and I'm all right with that. But so I look at that daily inventory and promptly admit when I'm wrong. There's a big difference there in waiting and holding on to it. When you know you screwed up and you just kind of like sit back and don't say anything, that's like it's for me, it like creeps into my head and builds up and builds up, makes it bigger and bigger. And if I would have just immediately said something, it would have been over. But I have to wait till it's ridiculously blown out of proportion, and I have a big argument with somebody, and, you know, I've gotten a lot better than that today. I've gotten a lot better at that. And again, that is a direct correlation to where I'm at in my recovery on that day, how spiritually sound I am. So I move on to the 11th step. And the 11th step was really a very neat step for me. And it was about, you know, meditation and prayer, you know, listening for God's answers for me. And it's so funny because I've meditated in the craziest places, done the craziest things. I'll tell you that my son's father one time came home, and I was meditating in the tub with a snorkel on. You know, I'm under the water, butt naked, sticking up. And he's like, "What in the world are you doing?" I'm like, "Don't bug me." You know what? It was a form of meditation that I learned. It worked well at the time. I've done several different kinds of meditation. I strongly encourage anybody to try it. I know that it's very hard in the beginning to still your mind. It's very difficult to do that. And then when I moved on to my 12th step, and they talk about a spiritual awakening, you know, and I look back in my recovery, and early on, I've had spiritual awakenings all along. You know, I can remember when I had somewhere around between like 60 and 90 days, and we were in the circle at the end of the meeting, and I was saying, it like just dawned on me at that moment that people were actually staying clean. Like, I was thinking, oh my God, if people are really staying clean, you know, because I had stayed clean for 60 days, and that was just amazing to me, that if people are actually staying clean, wow, you know, that guy over there has got 8 years, that guy over there had 10 years, you know, and it was just like, oh my God, this is real. We're actually doing it here together. We're actually staying clean and living life. Well, the 12th step, they talk about the result of working the steps, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of working the steps. Now, that to me, and it's carrying the message. My spirit was so open at that point because I've gone through these 12 steps and now I can help other people. And it makes everything that I've gone through in my life worthwhile. I remember hearing people say in meetings that they were grateful for all their experiences. And I said, "You're grateful for rape? You're grateful for getting your ass kicked?" You know what, those things, I was saying, I'm not grateful for that. Violence, rape, no. You know what, today, I'm grateful. I'm grateful for every experience I've had. And all of those included. Rape is not a happy thing. But you know what, today, I can sit and talk to a woman and say to her, "I know how you feel. We can get through this. We can recover, and things will get better." And that's a big gift for me. Because now it's taken a negative force in my life and made it into something positive. And that's amazing. And it's the same thing with the drug addiction. I can say to women now, new women, "How am I going to stay clean?" They say, "You know what? We can do this together." Because that's what they did for me. We could do it together. Now, I talked about the difference between the woman that I want to be and the woman that God intended me to be. Okay? I will tell you that I'm now a mother. My son is 10 years old. And he's never wondered about his mother, whether she's coming home, where we're sleeping, where we're eating, none of that stuff. He's had a mother that's been in recovery the whole time, a stable environment with a woman that loves him. I own my own home today. I'm an accountant. I even have a pool in my backyard, okay? That is cool. I don't know. I don't have that screen patio thing anymore thanks to the damn hurricanes. But it's a great thing. And I was telling Margie on the ride up, you know, I built this little thing where we can throw firewood in, sit outside and toast marshmallows. You know what? That would have never got me before. You know, honestly, I used to use kids to buy and sell drugs. I could have cared less about children. And today, children have a very soft spot in my heart because I know that our world depends on what their life is like today and how they grow up. And I know that in an instant, One bad thing can alter a child's life for the rest of his life or the rest of her life. And any incest survivors, you know what I'm talking about. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Your life can be changed just like that. Now, my son's father, I met him in recovery. He was a big bodybuilder, okay? I loved him. You know, I like those good-looking men. And he was fine, okay? I met him at the Tuesday night meeting, the fashion show meeting. It was a big meeting. And I was like, woo, I was scanning him from way back. I was like, well, I got to move up front so I can get some view up on this guy. You know, and I walked my little mini skirt by him. You know. And the next thing you know, we're living together. Like, I knew in 3 weeks we're in living together. And anyway, we had a very funny relationship. My son's father, Billy, his name is, had a very hard time staying clean. And unfortunately, when my son was 5 years old, I had to sit down and tell him that his father had died. That his father had suffered from a massive heart attack, and he's never going to come back. And I got to tell you, that was the hardest thing that I've ever done in my entire life. I love my little boy more than anything. And to sit there and tell him that daddy's not going to come home, daddy's not going to be able to teach you all those things that only a dad can teach. I can teach you how to shop a good sale, okay? I can't really teach you how to throw a football because mine goes whoop, 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 whoop. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. I've stayed clean through it. My son has gotten his needs met. I will tell you that my son didn't know how to pee standing up, okay? I don't know how to pee standing up, so how am I going to teach a kid how to pee standing up? So I'm out at a meeting one night at the IHOP. After the meeting, we go to the IHOP, and one of my friends says to me, "What do you mean your kid don't know how to pee standing up?" I said, "You heard me." He said, "Oh, come on." And this was a guy that I knew for a long time. He used to be my sponsor's brother. He said, "Come on, boy, we're going in the bathroom." He flipped the garbage can over for him, taught him how to pee standing up. That's how I know God is good. You may not get what you want, but you will always get what you need. And that is reality. My son will be, he'll get everything that he needs. Guess where he is right now? Camping, freezing cold weather with the Cub Scouts, doing the manly thing. I was like, hey, that's cool, you know? And so these are the things that you know, I know that God's will for me is so much better than my will, because you know what? I would have chosen to never have a child. I didn't want to have a kid. That was not part of my plan. I could have cared less. I was like, they're loud, they're obnoxious. Me, loud and obnoxious? Hello. They're getting in my way, you know what I mean? I'd have to provide for them. That's all that selfish stuff that I had, selfish, self-centered. You know what? It ain't like that today. It ain't like that. I have a beautiful little boy that is incredibly intelligent. He is the apple of my eye. We have a great relationship, and he comes and tells me things all the time. You know, just told me the other day he was checking some girl out. I was like, oh God, 10, no! I'm not ready for that yet. But so what I've learned about Narcotics Anonymous and just about life in general is that that God will provide for me no matter what. If I do the next right thing, the next right thing has the opportunity to happen. Doesn't mean it's always gonna happen. In the end, it is the right thing. But at the time, sometimes I don't know that. I'm very grateful to be clean. I love the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't go anywhere else. There is no other fellowship that I need to go to today. I get all my needs met right here. And my sponsor is an NA. Her sponsor is an NA. Her sponsor is an NA. We have this great big family meeting that we do. You know, it's fun. It's fun. I love recovery. I've had a lot of fun over the years. I like to go dancing, you know, and if you can get out to conventions, it's a fun time. I love meeting new people. So this is a very great place to do that, you know. And I've met some really solid people since I've been clean, you know. I just got this thing the other day, and, you know, talk about NA friends and regular friends. You know what? My regular friends, people that I know outside of the fellowship, they don't really care about your feelings, you know what I mean? Like, you go into work, they don't really care about that stuff. The people in the rooms, they genuinely care about me. And it's amazing to me. Absolutely amazing. I don't know. I guess I'm done. I'm very grateful to be here. Thanks for listening, and God bless each and every one of you, and may you be blessed with the gift of recovery each and every day forward.